Hi, I'm Maya, and you're listening to Soundpit. In this episode, I'll be talking about the history of skateboarding music. I'll discuss the origins of the sport and its connections to surfing, the evolution of hardcore punk into skate punk and later pop punk, significant skate videos and games, the intersection of hip-hop and skating, and the rise of skate and streetwear brands. So, skateboarding was probably born in the late 40s or early 50s, when surfers in California wanted something to do when the waves were flat. No one knows who made the first board, but the earliest ones were made of wooden boxes attached to roller skate wheels. They were a modification of kick scooters, which had existed since the early 1900s. People started removing the boxes and handlebars and just started riding the board with wheels, kind of like that scene in Back to the Future. The first manufactured skateboards were ordered by a surf shop in Los Angeles in 1959. The sport was promoted to surfers as sidewalk surfing, and early skaters emulated surfing maneuvers, performing barefoot. California duo Jan and Dean recorded the song Sidewalk Surfing in 1964, which is the Beach Boys song Catch a Wave, but they changed the lyrics to make it about skateboarding instead of surfing. You can do the tricks the surfers do, just try a Quasimodo or the carpenter way. Grab your board and go sidewalk surfing with me. As the 60s continued, skating competitions and magazines began to pop up. The first skateboarding film, Skater Data, was released in 1965. It won a few awards, including the Palme d'Or for Best Short Film at the 1966 Cannes Film Festival. It showed footage of skaters, without dialogue, just the sounds of their boards to an original soundtrack that was created by surf music pioneer Mike Curb. Although with a name like Curb, it was sort of made for skateboarding. You can see in the movie how similar skating was to surfing, before the boards got a bit more rigid and stable. It's only 18 minutes long and it's on YouTube, so I'd recommend checking it out. It's a very sweet teenage love story. In 1965, after a few years of massive skateboard sales, skateboarding began to decline due to poor quality products and the fact that many people saw the activity as a public nuisance. By 1966, a variety of sources began to claim that skateboarding was dangerous, resulting in shops being reluctant to sell them and parents being reluctant to buy them. Sales dropped significantly, and the same year, Skateboarder magazine stopped publication. The popularity of skateboarding dropped and remained low until the early 70s. However, it was resurrected around 1975 thanks to new developments in the boards and the wheels. The wheels went from clay to urethane thanks to Cadillac wheels. Jim Evans, an artist who made album covers and music posters for a lot of major bands, from Blink 182 to Metallica, actually made some of the first ads for Cadillac. Skateboarder magazine was also resurrected, the first skateboarder safety gear became available, and skateboarding contests started popping up all over Southern California. The stunts started to go a bit more aerial, and this was immortalized in the documentary Dogtown and Z-Boys, about a group called the Zephyr Team, who developed a lot of these tricks in swimming pools which had been emptied out during a drought, in Dogtown, a nickname for an area in Southern California. Throughout the 70s, skateboarding continued to be associated with California surf culture and surf rock. However, it also began to bond with ska, reggae, and punk rock, all genres with fast tempos, raw energy, and rebellious attitudes. Punk sort of developed simultaneously in New York and in the UK. New York had the Ramones, the New York Dolls, the Stooges, MC5, and Velvet Underground, all arty and experimental bands with associations with glam rock, and also very strong associations with heroin. In the UK, it was bands like the Sex Pistols, the Clash, the Damned, Exploited, and the Specials. The Specials founded a label called Two Tone Records, referring to the mix of black and white culture in ska and UK punk, and they often used a black and white checkerboard pattern to symbolise racial unity. The design was adopted by the skate brand Vans after the company noticed skateboarders drawing it on their shoes. All you pops and all you tits, that's no protest. That was Do the Dog by The Specials. By the late 70s, a punk rock scene began to establish itself in California. A number of bands formed in LA, such as The Weirdos, The Screamers, Germs, X, and The Go-Go's. Many bands also formed in the San Francisco Bay, including The Nuns, Crime, Avengers, The Mutants, and The Offs. The punk of this period was musically very eclectic and experimental, sometimes crossing over into art punk, new wave, electropunk, and rockabilly. That was X with Los Angeles. In 1978, in Southern California, the first hardcore punk bands emerged, as a reaction to what was regarded as a stagnancy in punk and its associated genres. Some young music fans had come to feel that traditional punk, such as that of the Ramones and the Clash, had become commercialised. Meanwhile, its offshoots, new wave and post-punk, were experimenting with arty and increasingly pop-centric sounds. Hardcore rejected punk's turn towards the mainstream and sought to re-establish its roots in aggressively fast tempos and confrontational attitudes. The hardcore sound can really be traced back to a band from Michigan called Death, formed by three black brothers in the early 70s. However, they didn't experience any success until the 2000s. There's a great documentary on this called A Band Called Death. Bands like Black Flag, Circle Jerks, and Middle Class are generally credited as being the originators of hardcore. Next up is Black Flag with Nervous Breakdown from their 1979 debut EP. I'm about to have a nervous breakdown. My head really hurts. If I don't find a way out of here, I'm gonna go to surfers. I'm crazy and I'm hurt. Head on my shoulder. Hardcore bands and fans tended to be younger than the art punks of New York and the older LA scene, and came mainly from the suburban parts of the Los Angeles area, especially the South Bay and Orange County. This resulted in a rivalry between the older artsy Hollywood scene and the hardcore suburban surf punk or beach punk scene, although the more inland suburban kids tended to skate rather than surf. The latter group eventually displaced the Hollywood acts, who mostly went on to become new wave bands. Another important band on the scene that I mentioned was Circle Jerks, which featured Black Flag's original singer, Keith Morris. Beverly Hills, Century City, everything so nice and pretty. All the people look the same, don't they know they're so damn lame? There she goes, creepy suit, spandex pants, cowboy boots. Black Flag and Circle Jerks were featured in the 1981 documentary The Decline of Western Civilization, alongside X and Germs. It's a great film, worth checking out. By the time the film was released, other hardcore bands from Los Angeles County were also making a name for themselves, such as Bad Religion, Descendants, and Youth Brigade. Neighbouring Orange County had The Adolescents, Agent Orange, Social Distortion, and TSOL. Agent Orange was actually already mentioned on the Surf episode for their cover of surf guitarist Dick Dale's song Mizaloo, which itself is an old Turkish song. Next up is The Adolescents with Amoeba.
We are scientists in our lab, looking through the microscope. The little glass eyes, they never lie. How can this fall like gold? I've never seen anything like it before. This amoeba's got a money of its own.
Shortly after Black Flag debuted in Los Angeles, Dead Kennedys were formed in San Francisco. Their music had a strong surf influence and was riddled with political satire. Lots of hardcore bands came out of a suburb of California called Oxnard, which was 60 miles northwest of LA. The movement was called Nardcore, and it included bands like Dr. No, Ill Repute, and Aggression. Doug Moody's Mystic Records launched a lot of Nardcore bands onto vinyl, including Ill Repute. It was in these areas in South California that punk, surfer, and skateboard ideologies all intertwined.
I was a surfer, I had a skateboard, I was so heavy, man, I lived on the strand. I was so wasted.
In the early 80s, hardcore punk scenes started to form in cities beyond the West Coast. The first hardcore band to form on the East Coast of the US was Washington, D.C.'s Bad Brains. Initially formed in 1977 as a jazz fusion ensemble called Mind Power, and consisting of all black members, their interpretation of hardcore featured some of the fastest tempos in rock music. The band released its debut single, Pay to Come, in 1980, and were influential in establishing the DC hardcore scene. Also from DC and influenced by Bad Brains were Ian MacKay and Jeff Nelson, who formed the band Teen Idols in 1979. The group broke up in 1980, but the two went on to form Minor Threat, a band which has arguably had the biggest influence on the hardcore punk genre. Ian MacKay was childhood friends with Henry Rollins, who would later come to prominence as one of the lead singers of Black Flag. The two had a skate group called Team Sahara with their friend John Hargadon. There's quite a sweet picture of Minor Threat watching Rodney Mullen skate. Mullen modified and popularized the kickflip and eventually became one of the most famous street skaters of all time. And lots of the pro skaters at the time were associated with hardcore. Dwayne Pieces was lead singer of the punk rock band US Bombs. Tony Alva was part of the group GFP, and Steve Caballero was in a band called The Faction, which coined the term Skate and Destroy, which was later used by Thrasher magazine as the name of their 1999 video game. Following the development of the VHS tape in the late 70s, skate videos became an established feature of skateboarding culture by the latter half of the 80s. Although many of the featured artists in the first videos were temporary bands formed by the skaters themselves, Early punk icons like Black Flag, The Faction, and Descendants were often featured too. The 1984 video, Bones Brigade Video Show, had mass appeal to young skaters all over the country and featured skaters like Tony Hawk, Rodney Mullen, Steve Caballero, Mike McGill, Lance Mountain, and Stacy Peralta. The second Bones Brigade film, Future Primitive, came out in 1985, the same year that Back to the Future featured hoverboards. But skateboarding was popularized by the 1986 skateboarding cult classic, Thrashing, which featured Tony Alva, Tony Hawk, Christian Hosoi, and Steve Caballero. It had a rock and hardcore soundtrack, including this track by Circle Jerks. Hardcore punk was hard, fast, and reckless. It replicated the feel of skating, which already had a reputation for being dangerous and counterculture. Vancouver-based band DOA's 1981 album, Hardcore 81, is thought to be where the genre got its name. 1981 was the same year a 14-year-old Tony Hawk went pro, and also the same year that Thrasher magazine started, initially as a way to promote independent truck company, which made skateboard trucks.
Yeah, fuck you, baby, I think I'm dead. Look at me around, what you think? You don't like it, but it's me. Okay. You're the only.
Punk would often feature very short songs. Johnny Ramone wrote that the Ramones songs were shorter because they played really fast. They were written and structured like a regular track, but the speed that they were played at ended up making them short.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight.
The Ramones set a precedent and short songs became pretty common in punk, including hardcore. It was also a response to progressive rock, stuff like Led Zeppelin, where songs could sometimes be 20 minutes long and were very complex. Punk, in comparison, was raw, stripped back, and simplistic. Like this song by Agnostic Front. Short and sweet. It also means that I can play it in full on the podcast without getting in trouble for copyright reasons. Common at hardcore shows was pogo dancing, where people would jump up and down on the spot, and slam dancing, which became known as moshing, where people would shove each other on the dance floor. Both performers and audience members would also often spit on each other. Combined with the high BPM music, this would sometimes lead to violent escalations, and concerts in the early Los Angeles hardcore scene increasingly became sites of violent fights between police and concert goers, particularly as it would attract skinheads who didn't care about the music and just wanted to cause trouble. These violent, younger punk fans were often referred to as HBs, since they mostly came from the Huntington Beach area of California. This forced Black Flag to have to create their own underground touring circuit. They'd play at picnics, house parties, schools, any place that was available, and they would promote their shows by plastering hundreds of flyers across town. Other hardcore bands soon adopted the same route.
Dallas, Coward, Ride the Cold! Rise above, we're gonna rise above! Make this score, what we say! Rise above, we're gonna rise above! Try and stop, what we do! Rise above, we're gonna rise above! When they can't do it themselves! Rise above, we're gonna rise above! Way up high, up your abuse!
While UK punk was political, early US punk like the Ramones wasn't really, until hardcore came along. Both Ian MacKaye and the Black Flag brothers, Greg Ginn and Raymond Pettibone, who made the band's cover art and posters, were from intellectual families and grew up immersed in 60s California hippie counterculture. It's also notable that this subculture formed against the backdrop of glam rock, disco, and the flamboyancy of the 70s and 80s. While glam rock was about being loved and being an insider, punk was about being an outsider, rage, independence, and anti-establishment ideology. This was also clear in the fashion, with hardcore bands opting for simple, functional clothing like a black t-shirt and jeans, contrasting with the crazy outfits of glam. This removed clothing as a distraction and was a message in anti-materialism, but it was also more functional when it came to skating. Minor Threat sang about straight edge living, which basically meant abstinence from drugs and alcohol. This came about through MacKaye witnessing his friends abusing alcohol and drugs and acting recklessly. He decided early on that it wasn't for him. Their 1981 song, Straight Edge, was only 45 seconds long, but it inspired a movement. The song wasn't intended to be a manifesto, but people saw it as an ideology. Bands like 7 Seconds followed suit, advocating for a straight-edge lifestyle and even knocking beers out of audience members' hands. This movement had been developing in punk before Minor Threat, but their song was influential in giving the scene a name and a figurehead. MacKaye initially reacted negatively to the movement because he never intended to tell anyone what to do, and some people in the movement were very hardline about it. However, he remained committed to the politics, and MacKaye's later band, Fugazi, who's one of my all-time favourite bands, would turn down interviews that would feature ads for alcohol or tobacco. Straight Edge spawned the subculture's youth crew, centred around vegetarianism and straight edge ideology, the more extreme hardline, and the Hare Krishna-inspired Krishna core. It was also responsible for the emergence of all-ages shows, based on the rationale that you shouldn't have to be old enough to drink alcohol to access music. A black X became the symbol of straight edge, since it was the mark that the teen idols had to put on the back of their hands when playing gigs to show venue staff that they were underage and shouldn't be served alcohol. Similarly, Bad Brains sang about PMA, or positive mental attitude. It was a stark contrast to the nihilism of early punk rock, which was dominated by anger and discontent. We Straight Edge and PMA really contrasted with both the hippie culture of the 60s and the glam rock and early punk junkie culture. There was always a lot of animosity between the hippies and punks. I think part of this was because while they were both anti-establishment, the hippie school of thought was more passive, preaching that you could drop out of society and take a stand by not conforming, while the punk attitude was more active and DIY, with the idea that if you don't do something, no one's going to do it for you. And there really was an emphasis on DIY ethos. Anyone could be in a punk band. Instead of trying to be courted by the major labels, hardcore bands started their own independent record labels and distributed the records themselves. Black Flag had SST Records, which stood for Solid State Transmitters, originally Greg Ginn's business selling computer parts as a teenager. Dead Kennedys formed Alternative Tentacles, and Bad Religion guitarist Brett Gurwitz founded Epitaph. After distributing themselves, normally these labels would branch out to other local underground bands. Ian MacKay and Jeff Nelson's Discord Records didn't use contracts for this and would sell their records cheaply so that everyone could access the music. They routinely made a loss on their music because of this, but it meant that they could stick to their principles. Fugazi would reject massive amounts of money offered by record labels following the rise of grunge because they wanted to retain creative control. They also turned down opportunities like playing at the Lollapalooza festival because they thought the tickets were too expensive. Other important independent labels include Revelation Records and Twin Tone. The music and culture of hardcore was promoted through word of mouth and fanzines like Flipside, Slash, and Touch and Go, which became a record label. Zines typically included reviews of shows and records, interviews with bands, letters, ads for records and labels, and they were usually handmade. So DIY basically formed the backbone of hardcore. Not to mention that Black Flag's touring circuit and promotion was DIY, even if it was something that they were forced to create. In a way, it was folk music. It was underground, political, and indigenous and original to the area.
Someday, I'll feel no pain. Someday, I won't have a brain. They'll take away the part that hurts and let the rest remain. Fix me, fix my head. Fix me, please, I don't wanna be dead. Someday, well, I'll be rich. Someday, I won't listen to you, bitch. I'll turn up the volume and you can hear all the shit we play just for you. Fix me, fix my head. Fix me, please, I don't wanna be dead.
Around the time that hardcore was coming up, there was an influx of gangs into the LA skate punk scene. The most violent were the Suicidals, and the band Suicidal Tendencies was sort of associated with them. Formed in 1980, their shows became so violent that by 1983, they could no longer even play in Los Angeles. The music video for that song was made for a movie. I couldn't find the name of it because it was that unsuccessful, but it weirdly features Timothy Leary in it as an actor, so maybe punks and hippies did mix sometimes. Suicidal Tendencies were one of the pioneers of crossover, a genre that mixes punk and metal. Despite the ongoing culture war between punks and metalheads, metalheads looked down on punk DIY culture and the fact that a lot of bands couldn't really play, while punks saw metalheads as phony and more into style and technicality than message. Bands like Suicidal Tendencies, Black Flag, TSOL, Fear, DI, The Adolescents, DRI, and others influenced later thrash metal and metalcore bands like Anthrax, Slayer, and Metallica.
You tell me what I wanna hear. I hear it all with my ears, but that won't do me any use. So I use my eyes to the drum. Not yet, psycho bitch, and I use psycho bitch, and I say psycho bitch, and I get psycho bitch.
Some of the members of Suicidal Tendencies actually went on to form the funk metal band Infectious Grooves, with band members from Metallica, Jane's Addiction, and Faith No More. so there was even more of a mixing of genres. The band also helped to define skater fashion with a sort of proto-Fred Durst look, with flat caps, bandanas and baggy shorts, which were taken out of the same gang culture that the music came out of. Hardcore also influenced grunge, particularly Black Flag's later stuff, which was slower and more metal. Melvins actually started as a hardcore band, but they got bored of playing so quickly and decided to play slower and turn up the distortion, creating a new sound. They ended up being crucial to the formation of both grunge and sludge metal. Melvins were Kurt Cobain's favourite band, and also friends of his, who introduced him to punk and hardcore. Cobain played with Melvins and met his later Nirvana bandmates through hanging out with them. He was actually supposed to produce one of their albums, Houdini, but they fired him because his addiction issues were getting in the way. Next up is a song from that album. This is Capacci. By the mid-80s, many major punk bands such as Black Flag and Dead Kennedys had broken up, while others like TSOL and Circle Jerks began to change their sound in favour of more hard rock or metal directions. This was despite the efforts of the Revolution Summer, an attempt to revive hardcore, but with an embracing of animal rights and vegetarianism, anti-sexism and opposition to violence at concerts. An offshoot of hardcore began to emerge, with strong ties to the Oxnard movement. Early bands included JFA, Gangrene, and The Big Boys. Next up are the Big Boys from Texas with Fun Fun Fun, a cover of the Beach Boys. I love the cover art for this album, The Fat Elvis. This new kind of hardcore was known as skate punk due to its associations with skate culture. The term had been used to refer to the earlier hardcore punk and crossover thrash bands with connections to skateboarding culture like Black Flag, Suicidal Tendencies and Minor Threat, but it came to refer to this new sound, which featured sing-along anthems, catchy pop-inspired melodies and vocal harmonies reminiscent of Beach Boys' surf pop. Skate punk was also less political than hardcore, often featuring frat party humour and songs about relationships and teenage confusion. It was almost a return to the melodic approach of the Ramones. However, it did retain the speed and anger of hardcore. I don't wanna talk on the telephone. I don't wanna see no picture. She'll find out just what she needs when she does. I'm not afraid to die. hear the surf influence there. Those drums are insane. Descendants changed their name to All when Milo Aukerman, the lead singer of the band, left to pursue a graduate degree in biochemistry, forcing the band into a hiatus. And so the name of that album is Milo Goes to College. Thrasher magazine sponsored skate rock cassettes compiled by Drunk Engine singer and skateboarder Morrison Mofo Foce, who's often credited with first coining the term skate punk. Next up is a song by Drunk Engines that featured on the first skate rock tape.
Beg me some more. There's someone knocking at my front door. A police cop, then he's coming up to me. Look here and see what you've done.
The band members wore masks that resemble Indian ghost warriors and claim that the masks allow them to channel spirits that make them play better music. In 1988, Bad Religion steered skate punk down a more melodic route with their influential album Suffer. This song is off of it. This is Do What You Want.
But don't do it around me. I don't miss anticipation, breed apathy. I sit on my ass all goddamn day. A misanthropic anthropoid with nothing to say. What you must do all you can. Break all the fucking rules and go to hell with Superman and die like a champion. Yeah, hey!
Skate punk often included elements of ska. Like I already mentioned, ska and punk have always been pretty entangled. And in skate punk, you can really hear it with the band NoFX. NoFX saw major success with the album Punk and Drublic, released in 1994. The next track is off that album. This is Linoleum.
My closest friend, Linoleum. Linoleum supports my head. Give me something to believe. Beachside, gum in the sand, metal meter in my hand, sport in a pocket full of change. That's me on the street with the violin under my chin.
This sort of skate punk paved the way for third wave ska, with bands like Sublime, No Doubt, Operation Ivy, Fishbone, and Rancid. In the wake of the grunge explosion in the early 90s, skate punk broke into the mainstream. Bands like The Offspring and Pennywise began being played on MTV as well as mainstream radio, rather than the smaller local public and college radio stations.
I took her back and made her dessert. Oh, I know I'm being used. That's okay, man, cause I like the abuse. Oh, I know, playing with me. That's okay.
That was The Offspring with Self-Esteem. Everyone I speak to seems to hate them, but I've got such a soft spot for them. In 1994, Epitaph Records, who I mentioned was founded by Bad Religion guitarist Brett Gurwitz, and Fat Wreck Records, founded by NoFX frontman Fat Mike, released the compilations Punkorama and Fat Music for Fat People. Next up is Pennywise with Dying to Know, which featured on the first Punkorama. Highly influential skate film in the 90s was Spike Jonze's 1991 movie, Video Days, which actually featured a lot of jazz, funk, and soul artists like John Coltrane, War, and the Jackson 5. Sonic Youth had Spike Jonze direct the music video for their single 100% in 1992, which also featured skateboarder Jason Lee.
I can never forget you.
Recording technology was also becoming increasingly available, so you had people just recording and editing themselves and their friends skating and creating new tricks and styles. If you watched skate videos in the 90s, the music would vary between rap, punk, jazz, metal, and just about everything in between. As skate punk became more popular during the 90s, it changed into a more melodic genre, which became known as pop punk. Pop punk really broke into the mainstream with Green Day's 1994 Woodstock performance of Dookie.
Well, don't get lonely now. And try your one in a life. I'm just moving for the moving sneaks in my back. Just a touch and so upside. You've been thinking about ditching me. No time that sets the world up.
That was Green Day with When I Come Around off of Dookie. During this time, some skate punk bands experienced mainstream success and were featured at events such as the Warped Tour, which started in 1995. The festival later became the Vans Warped Tour, which strengthened the skate connection. Blink-182, who started out as a skate punk band before they went pop punk, played 7 times.
Well, I guess this is growing up.
Pop punk was tighter and better produced than skate punk, and more commercial, with bands tending to sign with bigger labels. Green Day were really criticised for signing with Warner, and they were frequently called out as phonies. Pop punk in general was pretty loathed by earlier punk bands and fans, who saw the music as commercial radio fodder. The guitars were softer, the vocals were more melodic, and the lyrics tended to be more romantic and adolescent. Stuff about breaking up with your girlfriend, rather than the themes of social isolation and political and cultural dissatisfaction that we heard earlier. As a result, the music was very popular with teens and preteens. However, older punks would often be aggressive to younger fans, so it made sense that they would pivot from skate punk to the friendlier pop punk. The music went on to really dominate the 2000s, with bands like Newfound Glory, Alkaline Trio, and Sum 41.
The state of the nation, we just need some motivation. These eyes have seen no conviction, just lies and more contradiction. So tell me, what would you say? I'd say it's time to live. So am I still waiting for this world to stop hating? Can't find a good reason, can't find hope to believe.
While punk was becoming increasingly commercial on the west coast of the US, something interesting was happening in the east. Like the rest of the country, skateboarding had spread to New York from its west coast origins, and, like many cities, there was a ban on skateboarding in the 70s, due to a lack of skate parks and safety and property damage concerns. Despite this, DIY skate spots popped up across the city, notably Central Park. By 1975, skateboarding was an established New York City counterculture that was also very entwined with graffiti. There were spots, locals, and territories presided over by crews that didn't like outsiders. By 1985, Brooklyn Banks, an area under the Brooklyn Bridge, shielded from tourists and pedestrians, was the absolute epicenter of New York City skateboarding. Skaters mixed with prostitutes, homeless people, crackheads, carjackers, and graffiti artists. And there were often sightings of Keith Haring and Basquiat. This culture collided with hip-hop, which had been in New York City since the 70s. However, nightclubs at the time wouldn't play it as they saw it as dangerous and violent, instead favouring house, which sounds a little bit familiar. So the convergence wouldn't have happened without Mars, a multi-floor nightclub founded by Yuki Watanabe, located downtown in New York's Meatpacking District from 1989 to 92. Each floor had a different scene, and one of them hosted a hip-hop night called Trip, started by Eli Morgan Gesner and his friends. There's a great documentary about this by Jeremy Elkin called All the Streets Are Silent. At first, Trip mostly hosted artists from the Native Tongues Collective, a group of late 80s and early 90s hip-hop artists known for their positive-minded Afrocentric lyrics and gentler jazz-influenced beats, like Queen Latifah, A Tribe Called Quest, De La Soul, and Black Sheep.
What's a black sheep? No, not who I am or when I'm coming, so you sleep. Wasn't in my home or wasn't in your sphere. Knew not who I was, but listen here. Prez, D-R-E-S, yes, I guess I can start. If it's alright with you, I'll rip this head joint apart. Back middle to the front, no front. Want a good time, wanna give you what you want. Can I hear a hey? Hey, giddy up. You got a hat?
Street kids would turn up at Mars and they were let in to make an interesting crowd. So you would have these graffiti kids and sweat-drenched skateboarders on the dance floor rubbing shoulders with hip-hop kids, turning out looks. At the time, hip-hop was a black thing and skateboarding was mostly a white thing, but really they were just two different presentations of the same expression of creativity, youth, and anti-authoritarianism, similar to punk, so they meshed pretty quickly. Plus, hip-hop's emphasis on rhythm and flow made a good backdrop to the fluid movements of street skating. Mars eventually hosted everyone from Grandmaster Flash and Afrika Bambaataa to a young Jay-Z. Most of the New York hip-hop scene passed through it at some point.
Listen, if you're missing, y'all, swinging while I'm singing. Hey! Giving what you're getting, knowing what I'm knowing, while the black band's sweating in the rhythm I'm rolling. Gotta give us what we want, gotta give us what we need. Hey! Our freedom of speech is freedom of death. We got to fight the powers that be. Fight the power. Fight the power. Fight the power.
A meeting at Mars led to the creation of the infamous Stretch Armstrong and Bobito radio show, which featured rappers such as Busta Rhymes and Method Man, and really bolstered their discovery.
Microphone checker, swinging sword lecture, closing down the sector, supreme neck protector, better want him kid, Mr. Mefsa, ballin' pop, bout to blow his lid from the pressure, too hot for TV, for sheezy, too many wanna be Harvey, easy, it's all in together, going all out together, it don't take much to please me, still homes, I'm never satisfied like the stones, we don't condone biting, see them selling crossbones, protecting what I'm writing, don't clash with the titan, who blast with a license, to kill rap recitants, come on.
Streetwear brands soon started to pop up. The first one was Fat Farm, founded in 1992 by Russell Simmons, and it's credited for creating what would ultimately become the standard, sometimes stereotypical, hip-hop look. Then, founded in 1993, Zoo York was a skate brand started by skater Rodney Smith, Adam Schatz, and Eli Gesner, the guy who had started the Trip nightclub. The company's name was taken from one of New York City's oldest skate and graffiti crews, Soul Artists of Zoo York, from the 70s. They made skateboard decks and t-shirts out of a grimy warehouse in Lower Manhattan and would also document street culture, mixing rappers and skaters, and with a focus on more low-key and not necessarily pro-skater street kids. These local, urban, independent companies helped to shape street culture. There was an anti-skate park and slightly anti-West Coast ethos. They shunned California surf brands, opting for more hood clothing like North Face, snapback hats, hoodies, and graphic tees, with an emphasis on personal style. This created a new identity and culture, forged through the music, fashion, and the skating itself, which was now taking place throughout the city. The sidewalks were thriving due to the collision of these two subcultures, and this was documented and disseminated in the videos, like Zoo York's mixtape, which featured its own soundtrack mixed by Stretch and Bobito.
The idea of style and competing for the best style is the key to all forms of rocking.
you never bluff. I am the best. I'm not bugging out. Guaranteed about jumping on all that. Baby, baby, doll. Baby, 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 doll. Bust about singing, get the beat, I never fall. Rocking for the 91, 2, and the 3, the 4, 5, 6, 7, just to see me. And then you come back to the jam and pay more. Bust about 2 bets for more. Stop chilling out, just listen to the style. Coming up, don't hurt me, and wow. I can go on and on and on. Showing you styles to the break of dawn. Some of you might get very, very, very busy. Kicking it, brush it down, to make it snally. Bust it on the style, just like this. Guaranteed to rock the rhythm, I'll persist it. Coming out the down, switch out different styling. Stop to get my drum, shoes can't see. But I'm gonna let me go, I'm gonna sit up all day.
Artists like Gangstar, Mobb Deep, and Souls of Mischief were also pretty commonly featured in skate videos.
Full clip. If you wanna mess with this, Gangstar, one of the best yet. I'm nice like that. So I suggest you take a rest.
So if you stand in my way, I'ma have to spray. Learn that if you come against me, son, you're gonna have to pray. Since back in the day I held the weight and kept my head up. They wanna see the guard catch your L, it's all a setup. I give no man a thing power over me. Why these niggas so jealous and looking sour over me? I'm bolder, G. I'm like impossible to stop. I'm like that nigga in the ring with you. Impossible.
In 1994, James Jebbia founded Supreme, which used a Barbara Kruger-inspired logo that connected skateboarding to the art world. It took an art gallery approach to a skate shop, with the boards on the wall as art. The shop was really used as a place to hang out for the New York skate scene. That same year, Nas released Illmatic.
Contacted, I attract clientele. My mic check is life or death, breathing a sniper's breath. I exhale the yellow smoke of the roof through righteous steps, deep like the shining, sparkle like a diamond. Sneaker is Louis on the Allen, and my army jacket lining hit the earth like a comet invasion. Nas is like the Afrocentric Asian, half man, half amazing. Cause in my physical, I can't express through song, delete stress like.
The skate culture that emerged was documented in Larry Clark and Harmony Korine's cult film Kids. The pair met skating in Washington Square Park when Corrine gave Clark one of his VHS tapes. And with the exception of Leo Fitzpatrick, the film features the real-life members of New York's skateboarding community, such as iconic Zoo York rider Harold Hunter. The soundtrack featured a lot of Beastie Boys songs, which is interesting since the Beastie Boys were a hardcore punk band before they were hip-hop, and kind of went on to blend the two. That was Beastie Boys with Flute Loop. You had a similar marrying of rock and hip-hop with Run DMC, who, like the Beastie Boys, collaborated with hip-hop and heavy metal record producer Rick Rubin, and both groups also played at Mars.
Swinging with the boys in tune, and the beat's flying up in the air. Swing a diddle-diddle with the titty in the middle, and you're swinging like you just don't care. So to the bitch head at the high school dance with a lady who was ready to play.
The Beastie Boys and Run DMC were kind of precursors to nu metal, a genre that blends hip-hop with thrash metal, which we discussed earlier as coming out of hardcore punk, and it also mixes in elements of grunge and funk. So stuff like Korn, Limp Bizkit, Styles of Beyond, Linkin Park, Deftones, System of a Down, bands that saw most of their popularity in the late 90s and early 2000s. However, nu metal was often looked down upon by both punk and hip-hop artists, probably because it is a little bit gimmicky and it's full of industry plants and copy-paste artists. It's particularly criticised by heavy metal musicians who reject it as a legitimate form of metal. But how could you hate these guys? Here's Limp Bizkit with Rollin'. In the same year that the United States Marine Corps was using commercial off-the-shelf skateboards during urban combat military exercises in a program called Urban Warrior 99, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater was released. Similar to skate videos, skateboarding video games in the late 90s and early 2000s, like Thrasher's Skate and Destroy and the Skate series, played a big part in increasing the popularity of skating and the music associated with it. The soundtracks normally featured a blend of punk, skate punk, grunge, and some hip-hop, some of the artists we've already heard. Next up is a song that was used in Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1, 2, and 4. This is Superman by Goldfinger.
So here I am, doing everything I can, holding on to what I am, pretending I'm a Superman. I'm trying to keep the ground on my feet. It seems the world's falling down around me. The nights are all long, I'm singing the song to try and make the answers more than maybe.
In the 2000s, punk, skate punk, grunge, and hard rock continue to be popular in skate music, influenced in part by Jackass and Viva La Bam, a show featuring skateboarder Bam Margera. Bam weirdly commandeered the logo of Finnish goth rock band Him, which was a heart-shaped pentagram, the heartogram, which you'll sometimes see on skateboards now. Bam's show also created exposure for his brother Jess's band, CKY, which stands for Camp Kill Yourself. They sort of shared the name, as Bam also had a series called CKY. Here they are with Flesh Into Gear, which was featured in Jackass, the movie.
Is destroyed. I'm I'm a human machine. If the future is bleeding, flesh in the gear, myself appears dissected and pretentious. A simple sound, a heavy sigh, could win the whole world over.
By 2001, skateboarding had gained so much popularity that more American people under the age of 18 rode skateboards than played baseball. Pop punk really began to bleed into mainstream teen and even pre-teen culture. The music was super commercial, for example, here's Avril Lavigne's Skater Boy from 2002.
Any more obvious? He was a punk, she did ballet. What more can I say? He wanted her. She'd never tell. Secretly she wanted him as well. But all of the friends stuck up their nose, and they had a problem with his baggy clothes. He was a skater boy, she said see you later boy. He wasn't good enough for her. She had a pretty face, but her was up his face.
In the early 2000s, Lupe Fiasco and Pharrell were the skate rappers. Both of them skated and rapped about it, and Pharrell's ice cream brand actually started as a skate team.
Face right on the hill. I wasn't marching band, I was a skateboarder. Jesus made wine, I couldn't make water. Oxymoronic, I'm here to destroy all you hate hoarders. You niggas was cool in school, now you niggas take orders. I'm not dissing your job, but now you listen and nod. Some out of limit shit, I know this position is odd. Don't gasp for air, you can turn blue. Look Excel, nigga, trust me, you can do it too. You could do it too, young love. You could do it too, young love.
Labeled a misfit, a bandit, cocoon, cocoon, cocoon. His neighbors couldn't stand it, so he was banished to the park. Started in the morning, one stopped after dark. Yeah, when they said it's getting late in here, so I'm sorry, young man, there's no skating here. And so we kick, push, kick, push, kick,
push, kick, push, coast. And away we roll, just a rebel to the world with no place to go. And so we kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick.
In the 2010s, later skate punk bands such as Trash Boat, Cerebral Ballsy, and Trash Talk achieved underground success. Here's Cerebral Ballsy with On the Run.
Catch me if you can, on the run, on the run. Catch me if you can, don't think you stand a chance. On the run, on the run, I'll be gone when I'm done. On the run, getting caught, not an option. Thinking fast, moving fast and making sure I avoid capture. Don't wanna deal with the consequences.
I used to watch a fair amount of skate videos on YouTube in the 2010s, and you still got some of the punk and hip-hop stuff, but also a lot of trap and drum and bass and indie rock, even jazz or experimental music. Artists like Frank Ocean, Matt DeMarco, and Odd Future became pretty popular around this time. Odd Future was formed in 2007 in LA by Tyler the Creator, along with Casey Veggies, Hodgie, Left Brain, Matt Martians, and Jasper Dolphin. The whole group consisted of rappers, producers, filmmakers, and clothing designers. Tyler, the Creator, and Earl Sweatshirt were also skaters, and they contributed to the explosion of Supreme and the skate style trend overall. They were constantly dripping in Supreme clothing and were close friends of the brand's LA Fairfax store. They also wore tons of Thrasher, Huff, Vans, and other skate brands.
Bitch, I'm with the fucking extras. Big dog, cup full of eggnog. Don't give a fuck about shit but clips and can't vlog, no. Sawed off, I eat those. These clothes, they free though. Straight from the back of the Supreme store. Don't give a fuck about these hoes, they just slob knob in New York shows. Thirsty for the clips till I'm not flow. Clitching Georgia trip, bitch, I got it popping. Me and Jasper are going coffin shopping. Nose of the boys see a lot of boxes. Bitches see a boy in the mouth, he's frothing. Chain is glossing.
In 2014, Supreme released its first full-length skate video, Cherry. The video opens with this next track by Cypress Hill.
I want to get high, so high. Well, it's the funk, let's take the blunt, I twist it, the slam of fire, to the fire punk on your discus. I want your mistress, you got the bad witness. Catch a hoe and another hoe, Merry Christmas. Yes, I smoke shit. Straight off the roach clip, I wrote shit. Fold the blunt at once to approach it. Forward motion, make a sway like the ocean. The herb is more than just a powerful.
Another pretty seminal skate video from the 2010s was London-based skate brand Palace's 2017 video, Palasonic. It featured a skater who's actually from my hometown, called Blondie McCoy. As a teen, he would bunk off of school to skate at the South Bank skate park by the river in London. And with the help of Palace, he started his own brand called Thames Fashion. If you're ever on the South Bank, there's like a ledge under the bridge called the Skateboard Graveyard, where people throw their old boards in tribute of a skater called Timothy Baxter, who got stabbed on the bridge in 1999. It gets cleared occasionally. Next up is a song that was on Palasonic. This is Killer by Adamski and Seal. Probably in part due to Odd Future, there was a resurgence of skateboarding brands in the mid-2010s, with Thrasher, Supreme, Vans and Stussy coming back into popularity and becoming associated with hype culture. It's funny because the worst thing in punk and hip-hop was always to be a poser. Punk in particular was always trying to prevent commodification, but now you've got pop punk and a lot of the symbols of punk have been commercialised. Even Raymond Pettibone's Black Flag logo has become a meaningless symbol that can be found in the flash sheets of any tattoo shop. It's the same with skate brands like Thrasher, Vans, and Supreme. It's gone beyond poses wearing them to look like they skate. Now there's a lot of people who probably wouldn't even associate them with skating and don't know their origins. But it is pretty ironic how Supreme ripped off Barbara Kruger's logo, and now they're the ones being ripped off and bootlegged. High fashion clocked onto the streetwear trend. In 2017, Louis Vuitton collaborated with Supreme, and the next year they brought on Virgil Abloh as their artistic director, and he brought a lot of streetwear influences to the house. In 2022, the year after his death, LV released a skate shoe as an homage to him. JW Anderson presented broken boards woven into knitwear in 2023, and this year, 2024, Gucci showcased a skateboard bag in their Cruise collection, after also collaborating with Supreme last year. TikTok had a bit of a skate and punk trend during the pandemic, although it's mostly very superficial and based on stereotypical aesthetics. However, eventually this content will reach people who really do connect with the sport, the politics, and the music. For example, Propagandi, which was never really that big back in the day, has been experiencing recent popularity. Here they are with Scar Sucks.
Scar sucks! Scar revival isn't cool, you stupid fuck! The fans are only in it for the bucks! And if you don't believe me, you're a schmuck! But the trend will die out with any luck! Yo, 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 yo.
It's probably fair to say now that skateboarding is in the mainstream. In 2020, skateboarding was added to the Olympics. The sport is now a $2 billion a year industry, and electric skateboards are fairly commonplace. So I'm going to end things there. If you like the podcast, then please give me a follow and a rating. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you next time. For now, I'll leave you with another song by The Offspring. This is I'll Be Waiting.
Yes, I'll never know, but I just stand alone in a room full of people with nothing to say. Fear on their minds, spoken the air.